Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
Iranian proxies have attacked U.S. forces about 78 times.
Yeah.
With these unmanned aerial vehicles. That was since 2021. That's according to the Pentagon. So the question is, how do you stop it from happening again? I'm talking preemptively. I don't mean retaliating for a strike when they strike us, but preemptively, John.
And I appreciate the question. Look, we're not seeking a conflict with Iran, as I said. We've been very clear with the Iranians and with our partners about how serious we are, the mission that we're doing in Syria is, and how much we're going to protect that mission. Iran should not be involved in supporting these attacks on our facilities or on our people. We've made that very, very clear. We're going to continue to be vigilant, to monitor this as best we can.
So that's what happened last night. Welcome to the radio program. Dana Lash here with you, top of our Friday first hour. That's what happened last night. And the retaliation from the United States seemed to be pretty swift. But then it's, well, what to do now? Because all of this has been, I mean, entirely created by an administration that has allowed for this power vacuum. Actually, I mean, we could go all the way back to the 70s if we wanted to. And this is after you had this week the Saudis and Saudi Arabia and Iran, trying to stay focused, guys. Saudi Arabia and Iran that had this brokered peace agreement with, I don't know, this normalized negotiations here with China. So it doesn't seem to be like, you know, doesn't seem to be working so much. So this is the start. This is the start of it all. So welcome to the show. Happy Friday. As I said, Dana Lash here with you. You're just perpetual curmudgeon. And the ongoing, I mean, we're going to dive into this. We're going to look at some of the other stuff and related to it, what could happen, how it could spin out of control, all that stuff. We'll get into that. We got some domestic stuff to look at because we have the House that failed to override Biden's veto, his first veto. If you get my email newsletter, I sent that out to you as well last night. There was a bunch of stuff that went out to you, so you have that. We got some domestic, we got woke, we got all kinds of stuff. And then, of course, you know, our discussion yesterday with Nikki Haley, which I was really interested in her response to, you know, how you would deal with that downed Reaper drone. And it's kind of fascinating how she would have dealt with that would have been to send a jet and then two more drones and a naval fleet. It seemed a little, but we're not going to send money to Ukraine. I don't know. We'll talk about that. So, as I said, to start with, this ongoing, I mean, this situation with Iran, because they have the ability to really, what's the word I'm looking for? When they were dealing with uranium and centrifuges and all this other stuff, all of the deals that they had made during Obama, Biden, up until this point, none of that was actually followed by Iranian leaders. None of it was followed by they did not at all in any way adhere to any of it, which is one of the reasons why they're able. I mean, and then this, because I've seen some people on social media say, well, this is, you know, it's their unaffiliated groups. That is such a lie. They're affiliated with Iran. Iran backs all these proxy groups. That's exactly what this is. We've been dealing with the proxy groups in Iran for quite some time. Now, I'm not saying I don't think at all whatsoever that there needs to be any kind of boots on the ground or anything like that, although I'm sure Lindsey Graham's very excited, super excited about it. But this U.S. contractor that was killed, and then we had others who were wounded, five service members wounded, another contractor was injured. DOD said that intelligence determined it was an Iranian drone. Of course it was. That was from Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. And he said the airstrikes were, they were conducted, he said, in response to the attack, as well as recent attacks against coalition forces in Syria by groups affiliated with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And so this was all in at the facility in the coalition base in northeast Syria. Now, those injured are said to be in stable condition, according to the Washington Post. And they said that they did make the determination that the unmanned aerial vehicle was of Iranian origin. So the response, came swiftly. I mean, I'm not opposed to a little airstrike in response for firing on our coalition forces. I'm not opposed to that. I mean, FAFO, right? And remember, these were just different groups. These were surrogate groups. That's what Iran does, because they don't want to go toe-to-toe, so they use these, for the lack of a better way to put it, these third-party groups. And so that's what we're seeing here. So we're gonna continue following any other developments and in any other retaliations or responses to this as well. We'll make sure that we get all of that out and get it for you. Now, in the meantime, some of the stuff that's happening domestically, let me pull up my thing here, because we had had a lot of movement in the House, and the House was not able to override Biden's first veto. Now, this was about the ESG stuff, because Biden after the House passed it, he vetoed the ESG bill. This was the one that they were saying Republicans are going to rob you of your retirement and all of that. They were trying to essentially codify what Democrats wanted to do, this environmental social governance, into every aspect of the financial sector. It's financial wokery, and as also it's kind of it's sort of like the Chinese credit behavioral score, that whole system, plus the wokery all wrapped up into one with some Operation Choke Point. That's really, ultimately, I think a good amalgam of that is exactly what this is. Chuck Schumer had supported Biden's veto. He had said it was appropriate. And so for the Senate, they're not going to take up the override because it didn't work in the House. So that's it. It was a 219 to 200. House fell short. It was they needed the 2/3 majority. They didn't have it. And so that was sort of pretty much expected. And then, of course, interestingly, the bill, when they had passed it, you had, well, in the Senate, Manchin and Tester joined Republicans in that. Now, they did, and this was the other thing, as Kane reminded me, they did pass the Parents' Bill of Rights, which you know is going to be immediately vetoed also. You know this bill is going to be vetoed. Now, the Parents' Bill of Rights, I think that this actually is a little bit trickier for Democrats to ignore than it is for instead of them just ignoring the whole ESG thing. And the reason I think this is because they lost a lot of parental support last roll around with the election. They lost quite a bit of it. This is specifically about parental control in the classroom. Nothing more. It's about parental control in the classroom. The phrasing that they use, that this is people banning something, or that, you know, they're book banning or anything like that, is so completely not accurate, purposefully so, because ultimately it's been the left that has always wanted to burn the books and ban the books. And I mean, they were the ones who went after, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago? I think it was like right when Trump got into office. Isn't that when they were going after Huck Finn. Or no, sorry. Yeah, Huck Finn and Mark Twain. They said that Mark Twain was problematic. And then, I mean, don't forget Dr. Seuss. They were going after Dr. Seuss as well. What this is it affirms parental rights, particularly in, I mean, all academic settings, but particularly in public schools for which they pay taxes, because parents should be able to make a determination as to what is or is not in their kids' libraries, their school libraries. So I realize, too, because one of the things that the bill was proposing is a full list of every single book, which I don't think that's actually too hard. Some people were saying, well, you realize how many books libraries get and just make a list, add them to an email. Is that so damn hard? Like, as you get them in, for real. The thing is that parents want to be able to weigh in as to whether or not they feel that the books are in the that are in their kids' libraries are appropriate. I mean, some of these books that have been in there, there are some people who might think that Republicans are overreacting. And sometimes, look, I'm going to be real. Sometimes there are times when Republicans overreact. They really are. But if ever there was a time they weren't, this is it. This is the time when they really aren't overreacting, because some of the images, we've talked about this before, that are in these books, like, I can't even show them on air because they're literal drawings of oral sex. And it's kids performing it in these books. I'm not joking. And those are the books that have been in these libraries. And they act like there's some sort of academic basis. And the reason, I mean, they've been in Texas libraries. In one of the schools in our area, a friend of mine, her daughter, although her daughter's in high school now, but when she was in junior high, she found one of those books. It was the genderqueer book. And that's one of the books that I'm specifically referencing. She found that in her library, that they found it, and they were like looking. She was looking for something specific. She was with her friends, and they ended up coming across this book, and they thought it was weird. And they opened it up, and oh my gosh! And she told her mom. She was afraid to tell anyone at the school because she thought, well, if the school put it here, am I weird for thinking that this is not right? She knew it wasn't right. That it was material that was way, way above her age grade, right? And the mom agreed. And the mom was like, why are these books in these kids' schools without us? This is something. And she was like, this is something we haven't had a very in-depth conversation about, because I, the parent, have determined that we're not ready. My daughter's not ready to have that. But yet all of these people who are pushing this stuff on the kids, they want to override the parents. These people don't know your kids. They have no idea as to your kids' emotional health, and nor do they care. These people make such a great game out of pretending to care about kids' emotional well-being. But they only care so far as it goes to include the parents in their consent and acknowledgement in it. The parents know their kids better than anyone else, but these activists don't care. So this is not at all about the children's well-being. This is about the activists gaining ground, and they want to use the backs of your kids to do it. We have a lot of stuff still to hit. So we have more on some of the stuff that's been happening in D.C. Ukraine. I also have some, golly, do I need to even get into the poll that came out? I looked at all the data. I looked at the crosstabs, the Biden poll. Oh, yeah, his approval is at actually the lowest it's ever been. Yeah. I don't even think I need to share. You guys know this. I don't even need to get. I mean, it's like in the 30s, man. It's low. So we're going to get into all of that. We also have some really interesting guests today. So some of you remember the reporter in the White House who got into a fight earlier this week with Karine Jean-Pierre? Because he was never called on. Well, we're going to talk with him. And we're also going to talk with Taryn Butler, who did all of the gung-fu in the John Wick franchise. It's going to be a fun show. So we have all of this and more. Folks, are you concerned about American K-12 education? Are you worried about what your children or grandchildren are learning or not learning in school? So if you've answered yes, my friends at Hillsdale College have a free resource for you. You've heard me talk about how Hillsdale College understands the importance of education to the future of our country, and now they're offering you 10 free print copies of their recent issue of Imprimis, entitled Education as a Battleground, written by Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arne. This special issue provides a factual account of the issues in the ongoing battle over education and why parents and teachers, not bureaucrats or activists, should guide what our children learn. With Hillsdale College, you can make a difference in your community by distributing these copies of Imprimis to your community. Don't miss this opportunity to arm yourself with the facts. Claim your 10 free copies of Education as a Battleground by visiting Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Act today and join the battle over education for our country's future. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com.
Fix the problem, not the blame. With threats of persecution of political figures, how should you react? Is this a political sideshow? It just demonstrates that we're an unserious nation. Should Trump own up to his mistakes? Should we ignore the Manhattan investigation? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I don't know. When I saw this headline, my first thought, honestly, was, boy, those are probably going to get shot down. Air taxis are coming to Chicago.
What?
Mm-hmm. Why Chicago, of all places? Air mobility startup Archer Aviation and United Airlines are working to bring air taxi service to Chicago, the companies announced Thursday. The planned service is going to run between O'Hare International Airport and Vertiport Chicago, a helicopter facility. The service is expected to start in 2025. So you can just, like, what, hop over all of the gang and drug violence? Is that what they're... I mean, I don't know. I just... Denver suburb is voting to ban new gas stations from being built in the name of making everything more expensive for the neighbors who they are annoying to the point of death. The city of council of Louisville, Colorado. I don't know if they do the Louisville style like Kentucky, so we'll say Louisville because they're Colorado and probably half Californians. It's about 30 minutes north of Denver, 20 minutes east of Boulder. They voted unanimously to approve a city ordinance that's going to cap the number of gas stations allowed in the city at just 6. Meaning only one more gas station is going to be allowed. But now that new gas station and any others that are built under this restriction must meet very, very certain requirements. And I mean, it's kind of, a lot of them are really dumb. So I'm actually going to revisit this because we're going to talk about energy here coming up as well. Let's see. Also, inflation in New York City. I love how people call it street meat. That can go really badly. But apparently now hot dog stands and bodegas. Oh, sorry. How does Jill Biden say it? Bodegas are rocked by inflation. Street vendors jacking up the price of the classic New York City hot dog. So first it was a slice of pizza. Now the hot dog is going from up to $3. Thanks, Biden. Biden inflation. Stay with us. We got a lot more on the way, including wokery and trans. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
They're gun-related crimes. It is ironic that yesterday, with the two-year anniversary of the massacre of 10 people, including a police officer, at the King Super Supermarket in Boulder, Colorado, and Republicans are here today to attack the ATF and mount a defense of every firearms and modification involved in that shooting. I commend the ATF for their work in identifying a problem and providing guidance to prevent the harm created by the misuse of stabilizing braces, which convert everyday firearms into killing machines.
You know what? I wrote yesterday, welcome back to the program, that Sheila Jackson Lee, from yesterday's, it was the GOP House Oversight hearing into ATF abuses, and specifically it was looking at some of the stuff as it relates to the whole pistol brace ridiculousness. Dana Lash here with you. Happy Friday, bottom of our first hour here. I wrote yesterday, I said, she believes that guns are not lethal without the addition of a stabilizing brace. And I think we should let her continue believing this. But I do think that her ignorance should immediately disqualify her at all whatsoever from proposing any type of legislation on or participating in any discussion involving Second Amendment rights. Now, if you don't understand what a pistol brace is, let me very briefly explain this to you. There's a primer for you, first off, up at Substack. Again, chapter and verse. Everything you always want to know, your girl's got you. I got you all up there. The pistol brace was invented by a guy. In fact, he was testifying yesterday, too, Alex Bosco. He invented it to actually help disabled veterans. It all started when he was at the range with a disabled veteran friend of his, and the range boss was concerned about the veteran friend. So he actually invented this stabilizing brace so that his friend could to aid him in shooting. It literally at all doesn't whatsoever change the function of a firearm. That is not what a stabilizing brace does. It doesn't do anything. It is an accessory. Sheila Jackson Lee doesn't understand the difference between a stabilizing brace and like a shoulder stock. She really doesn't. So, what caused this line of questioning, this back and forth? So this had to do, it all goes back to, actually, let's go all the way even back to, I think it was like 2012 when this thing was invented. So when Alex Bosco developed this, and like I said, he was testifying about this yesterday. When he developed this, he submitted the plans to the ATF. He did everything by the book. He did everything by the book, submitted the plans to the ATF. The ATF said, fine, this is great. No big deal. Not once, but twice they said this. The ATF said it was completely fine, totally legal, did not help any kind or increase any rate of fire. It doesn't do anything like that at all. And then again, when some busybody wrote the ATF and they were questioning, well, what if someone tries to use it, you know, tries to shoulder it? The ATF, even still then, second letter, said that it's a legal accessory. It's a legal accessory. Well, then fast forward to 2015. It was actually only a couple of years later. 2015, under Obama, because they, again, remember, these were legal under Obama, Biden this whole time. Then the ATF decides all of a sudden, for no reason, well, we changed our mind. You know, we told all of you who did everything by the book, and you who all you people who purchased these items in good faith, law-abiding Americans, purchasing a perfectly legal accessory, you did it by the book. Now we're going to make it illegal. I wanted to play audio soundbite one because this is Alex Bosco, the inventor of this. Now, again, I don't care if you're into guns or pistol braces or anything like that. Remember, these things are always variables. You can take it out and substitute something else in its place like that. Listen to Alex Bosco.
The effects of this change are enormous. According to the ATF, millions of Americans who followed ATF's advice for the past decade have, unbeknownst to anyone, been committing felony crimes. And ATF almost certainly underestimates the scope of the impact of the rule. In the final rule, ATF assumes that there are approximately 3 million firearms with attached stabilizing braces in circulation. But ATF failed to include sales after 2020. SB Tactical alone sold more than 2.3 million braces since 2020. Unless this rule is put on hold by Congress or the courts, the company I founded and many others will go out of business soon. Furthermore, responsible gun owners will be harmed. None of them want to run afoul of the NFA as a result of ATF's flip-flop. But neither do they want to purchase new braces when ATF now says that in order to use these braces, people must register in a federal database and submit their photographs and fingerprints to the government. The effects of ATF's rule is to put out of business the industry that ATF itself fostered for 10 years and punish consumers who relied on ATF's prior decisions. Mm. Ironically, this rule eliminates an important and widely adopted safety feature that will arguably make the sport of pistol shooting less safe. Ultimately, this rule should be seen for what it is. Yeah. Circumvention of the legislative process.
That's true. It is circumvention of the legislative process. Because, see, this is what Congress is supposed to do. Congress is the entity that determines the law. They write the law. Now, here's the big gripe that I have. Because you have these agencies, whether it's the CDC with the rent moratorium, whether it's, you know, the EPA, whether it's, doesn't matter, ATF. They're not legislative bodies, but they act like them. They write these rules and everyone goes, oh, but a rule is a rule. It's not law. Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. I'm so glad that you can say that. But tell that to the people who had to put a stop on the manufacturing of a perfectly legal accessory after the ATF two times told them it was perfectly legal to do so. Tell that to the millions of Americans. The Congressional Research Office estimates it's like anywhere from 20 to 30 million Americans may own one of these accessories who are going to be made into felons if they don't comply. Now, I was talking with a friend of mine who's an attorney, and we were talking about the regulatory process of this, because it kind of is, in my opinion, and again, I like to play a lawyer on radio, so we might have even some regulatory people who are regulatory experts out there disagree, but I really feel like it's kind of quasi ex post facto, meaning that, you know, to go back, this is why they, let me make it simple. Ex post facto is essentially when someone is charged with a crime that wasn't illegal at the time of the action. Then later it becomes illegal. And then they decide to go back and retcon history and charge them with a crime. Now, the ATF, I think it's quasi. I'm careful with my wording, because the ATF is trying to walk around this problem by generously giving people a little bitty, farty window of time to dispossess themselves of a perfectly legal firearm accessory. So they, I think it's what, they got to, you have to register them by May 31st with NFA. And it gets, so on next Tuesday, we're going to talk with my friend Stephen Hallbrook. And I'm having him on because he argued, where's, I got to pull this up, bear with me. He argued U.S. versus Thompson Center Arms Company. And this was back in 1992. And I want to have him on about this because this case, I think, really does play into this pistol brace scenario, situation here. Because, as I said, the pistol brace changes nothing about the function of the firearm, etc. The ATF is saying that you have to, you know, you're going to have to register with the NFA no later than May 31st, all this other stuff. Well, then here, the interesting thing is that the U.S. versus Thompson Center Arms Company, the way that I was reading it, that this would mean that if you have, you know, a brace, is so long as you have like a barrel that's 16 inches or longer, all that other stuff, if you have those accessories and they can be configured in that, you don't have to get rid of it. That's how I'm reading it. So it's really stupid. Now, why they're trying to criminalize, let me break this down really quickly for you. Why they're trying to criminalize the whole brace is because, you've heard it, for everyone who is not, we have some people listening who don't know all this about this stuff, and that's fine. Not everybody can know about everything. They're trying to argue that a brace makes a pistol a short-barreled rifle. Short-barreled rifles, things that are under, the barrels under 16 inches in length, those are considered NFA items. NFA standing for National Firearms Act, where they decided that out of, you know, no logic or reason, we're just going to ban a certain number of these things for the hell of it. I'm not exaggerating. And so that's why it's so arbitrary. And it doesn't make it an SBR. It doesn't make it any of that. But see, here's the thing. If people, because of this generously provided little window of time, if they do not register their stuff, they either have to register it, destroy it, or turn it into the ATF office. And this Thompson case makes me think, though, well, wait a minute. But if you can reconfigure it and do so, we're going to talk to Stephen Hallbrook about that on Tuesday. You also have Democrats absolutely praising the ATF to the skies. You know, the same ATF that flooded the streets with guns during Fast and Furious operation. You remember that gun walking operation? The ATF actually was pressuring FFLs to sell guns to known cartel members who then walked it across the southern border. 300 Mexican nationals were killed, including, by the way, the brother of the state of Chihuahua, the AG for that state. 300 Mexican nationals, to say nothing of border agent Brian Terry, an ICE agent. You had an ICE agent killed. You had a border agent killed. You had another, there's a border agent, Victor Avila, who was wounded by cartels, all using fast and furious guns, by the way. There were Mexican resorts that were shot up. Later found it was Fast and Furious guns that were involved. And it's the same ATF that tried to cover this up with Eric Holder at the DOJ. And I'll be damned, it's the same ATF that also helped Democrats use this, the Fast and Furious operation that they were trying to cover up, as justification to call for more gun control in the United States. If you'd like to see the receipts on these, you can go and look at chapter and verse over at Substack. But yeah, they're just great. To say nothing of Waco and Ruby Ridge, you know, the ATF popping off a mom holding a baby, or at Waco where they just decided to burn a whole bunch of kids alive in a building in the name of saving said kids. Sidebar to that, there's like this doc on Netflix. Have you seen it? This all happened when I was, I think, in junior high, because David Koresh dude was a nut. I mean, was it a cult? Yes. Were they weird? Yes. Did they ever find evidence substantiating that they were doing any of the stuff that they said they were doing? No. That's what's weird. They were trying to pop them for firearm manufacturing when they were not engaged in illegal firearm manufacturing. That's how that happened. That's how it started. Good heavens. So, I mean, these agencies, this is what it comes back to. Like, this doesn't have anything to do with guns, really. So I really think that the left really tries to purposely drag it into the weeds and specifically only focus on firearms so that you forget that this is an abuse that isn't limited to the ATF. It's an abuse that we see with the CDC. You had the CDC that was writing a rule demanding that all these people who own properties, you don't have to ask the people living in your property to pay you for the rent or for leasing anymore. But now the people who own the property didn't get a break on property taxes or their mortgages or anything else like that. No, they were supposed to eat the cost for rights. The CDC was doing that in the name of the emergency authorization with the pandemic. This is what I mean. This is an example of these agencies circumventing congressional oversight and drafting law. Now, here's my question. What in the hell are Republicans? You control the House. What are y'all doing in Congress right now to protect the rights of Americans so millions of people are not penalized by these agencies that pass rules which are treated as law, and then we go through this very long legal purgatory period until a court repeals it? Until which time, that is law, de facto law. You have to abide by it or you're penalized for it. So you can't sit here and tell people, well, it's a rule, not a law, when they can be rendered felons if they don't follow the rule. What are people in Congress doing about this? I mean, I've seen them talk a good game, and I've asked, not a one. Oh, believe me, friends. You see me out at events, if I'm with a lawmaker, you best assured that I've asked them about this. Not a one. No joke. And I don't mean to be mean to the ones that I'm on, you know, friendly terms with. Nobody's got a response for me here. Really frustrating. So we have a lot still to hit. We got Days of Our United States coming up.
Do you love bacon? I mean, really love bacon. If you're a bacon lover, today is your day. Whether for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, bacon is now free for a year at Good Ranchers. Subscribe to get 24 ounces of Applewood smoked bacon added to each box for a year. That's over $200 worth of bacon free. This is 100% American high-quality bacon sourced from local farms with no added hormones or antibiotics. To subscribe, find your perfect box in the Good Ranchers curated selection of pasture-raised meat and wild-caught seafood. Select the frequency that works best for you, and then enjoy less trips to the meat aisle and more flavor at dinner. As long as you stay subscribed, your price will never go up. That's the Good Ranchers price lock guarantee. Elevate your meals without elevating your expenses. Subscribe today at GoodRanchers.com for free bacon in every box for a year. Use code DANA to get an additional $20 off your first order. Get the best meat America has to offer. Visit GoodRanchers.com. That's GoodRanchers.com, code DANA. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
Red meat, black coffee, truth telling. The Dana Show.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Yes, one of my favorite episodes of these days of the United States had to do with a Florida lawmaker. He had a difficult moment in the state legislature this week as they met, because he was reading off names. It was a committee meeting, and he was reading off names at this committee meeting earlier in the week. Representative Will Robinson Jr. And here's a clip from the latest episode of Days of Our United States. Enjoy.
Floridization of counties, waves in opposition. Pamela Birch Fort, Florida State Conference of NAACP branches, waves in opposition. Anita Dick is an opponent.
His face.
Waves in opposition.
Great.
Holden Hiscock is also an opponent. Waves in opposition. Jimmy, Florida Apartment Association.
He saved some face on social media by saying, committee does meet again next week. Anita and Holden, please stop by. And, of course, he was talking about Mr. Hiscock. That's what he was saying. I also have, we got one more, another episode of Days of Our United States. Because, as you know, Joe Biden met with Justin Trudeau. Guys, I'm pleased to report that they had ice cream. This is huge, right? A reporter named Brian Platt from Bloomberg says, news alert, I can confirm reports that Trudeau and Biden did have friend chip ice cream last night. Mm-hmm. Maple flavored with chocolate chips and marshmallows. Oh my God. I mean, you know, the world can now start turning again. Now that we know what kind of ice cream that they had. So if you feel like you're living in a soap opera, folks, it's because you are. Second hour on the way. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us.
Mr. President, Pierre Poilievre, leader of His Majesty's loyal opposition. Absolutely. We believe that opposition is an act of loyalty in our system.
Ooh. Well, unfortunately, I mean, that's kind of how we all got started here in the U.S. of A. Welcome back to the program. Top of our second hour here. Dana Lash with you. Always good to be with you. You can listen from sea to shining sea. You can also stream the show through YouTube, Facebook. There's always kinds of always good discussion going on at YouTube. And you can also watch at Channel 347 DirecTV. So, as you know, Biden and Trudeau met. I told you last hour, because this is the most important story right now, friendship ice cream. It's what they had. They had friendship ice cream. But this little back and forth, he met with the loyal opposition and he didn't know what it was. The president of the United States, he was introduced to Pierre Poilievre, member of the Conservative Party of Canada. He is the leader of the official opposition. And that is just very interesting, the way that they, Biden goes, loyal opposition. He was just very, we do too, unfortunately, but I thought they loved democracy, but my democracy though, oh, my democracy. He was confused, and then he didn't really know what to make of it, and then he rejected it. Unfortunately, we do too. Unfortunately? What do you mean, unfortunately? You wouldn't be in office if it wasn't for opposition. Unfortunately? These people just want to, they just want control. Is all that it is. That was unfortunate. Now, the ongoing back and forth over parental rights, there were actually some lawmakers saying that, or not saying, suggesting, trying to intimate that somehow if parents send their kids to school, that somehow means that they have less input, or they are somehow, are they're just like giving up their kids because they go to public school? That's at least the way that the left has been acting. That's the way that they've been acting. So they have this parents' rights bill that's going forward. And they're fighting over it. And all it is a bill. This is in the wake of the Department of Justice following parents around as though they're treating them like they are, actually treating them like they're terrorists. Classifying them using a system created with the Patriot Act to categorize them as terrorists if they spoke out at school board meetings, etc. And they were upset over masking or lockdowns or the poor remote learning. Don't forget all of the stories that we saw, too. A lot of that had a lot of that came about. We talked to the dad from Virginia whose daughter was raped in the bathroom of a Virginia school by a male student who wanted to, at least that day, identify as female, and he attacked two female students. This is after parents have been finding pornography masquerading as academic literature in their kids' public libraries. I mean, junior high level, even. And the way that the left has tried to invalidate all the concerns of parents is by portraying them. And I will have you note that this was, you know, it's Democrats and Republicans that have joined together on this. A lot of these groups actually were started by people who were actual, they were Democrats. But they were created because parents wanted to be able to have input into what their kids had access to at school and what was being presented to them in the classroom. And the left has decided to just go full hog against attacking parents. This is one of the reasons why they lost so many longtime Democrat voters in Virginia when Youngkin was elected and some of these other areas. This is going to be a lot difficult, I think, for Biden and Democrats to spin if he vetoes this than I think it would be for the ESG veto. Because the ESG veto, you can drag it in the weeds and you can muddle the discussion and then people forget about it. But this, parents' rights of minor children, that's a lot harder. AOC was on the floor. And this is how they've been portraying this bill. I really think someone needs to get this girl a dictionary. Stat. Listen to her and what she calls this bill.
Asking the Republican Party to keep culture wars out of classrooms. Our children need urgent and aggressive educational solutions. The American Library Association coming out against this Republican proposal. When we talk about progressive values, I can say what my progressive value is, and that is freedom over fascism. Thank you very much.
Fascism.
It's fascism. So she's having this tantrum. It is real. It's, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing. The only party that's actually ever tried to ban books has been the left. All parents have ever done, and especially with this bill, is say, before you put these books in the library, we want to see them and approve them to make sure that they're age appropriate. I mean, if I showed you, and I know I say this before, I've said this before, but because of our simulcast, we're a nationally syndicated radio show. And so our simulcast, things are a little, makes it a little difficult to show things sometimes, right? If I were to show the images of what is in these books, I think DirecTV would take the entire network off the air. I'm not even joking you. I actually, sidebar, we can't show any of the violent stuff from the John Wick trailer when we show it earlier. I think we should have just edited together a montage of him holding puppies and be like John Wick, and then everyone thinks it's about John Wick holding puppies. It's like John Wick. It's John Wick. Come on. John Wick, maybe this is an unpopular viewpoint, it's a movie about a guy who loves his dog. There you go. Add it to the, make it the trifecta along with Where the Red Fern Grows and Old Yeller, John Wick. All right. So this is, she's saying that it's somehow fascist, and she's saying that these books have been banned. That's not accurate. And also parents are looking to make sure that books are not, it's not just communist propaganda masquerading as academics, too. Like in Florida, they were having this fight over whether or not queer theory was going to be taught. I don't even know what that is. What is even that? And it was queer theory in the context of African-American history, which is already mandated in education in Florida. I don't know what. And there, and that's the uncomfortable thing about the left, is the uncomfortable reality for them with this situation is that they can't really acknowledge that. Go back to, when did they have that Prop 8 bill in California, Kane? Do you remember? Was that like in 2012 or something? Yeah. 2011, 2012. I always thought this was so amusing. So the Prop 8 bill, that was about what, same-sex marriage? Yeah. The bulk of the people who, if I'm remembering this correctly, were backing Prop 8, who wanted to maintain like a traditional marriage, I guess, were Black and Hispanic Californians. The left had no idea what to do. They were trying to find some, they needed some people whose identity boxes could not be compromised. So they went after the Mormons. And they're like, it's the Mormons. And they went after them when it was actually not as many as them compared to Black and Hispanic families in California. There were numerous studies done on this. So it's kind of funny because they didn't know how to handle it. They don't know what to do if there is someone that is female or, well, women now, they just abuse patriarchy in a progressive patriarchal fashion. But they can't deal with Hispanic or Black Americans not being Democrat. They do not know how to deal with that kind of dissent. And they don't know how to deal with this either. They're trying to portray this as nothing but Republican parents, which then riles up these disgruntled parents even further because the parents know that they're not all Republicans and conservatives. And so it's interesting to watch. But this is all about making sure that parents have power. And I used to think that Democrats liked consent. I guess consent, they don't like consent anymore, huh? Interesting that. I have a couple of other things I want to make sure that we're hitting as well. I tweeted this out in the radio prep. This was a really sad headline. It has to do with a female cyclist. There are a lot of female cyclists that are having a hard time in the sport because of the entrance of men cosplaying as women. Hannah Arensman is one of those. She wrote an amicus brief to the Supreme Court. She's a 35-time winner on the National Cyclocross Circuit. And she said that she's retiring from cycling because she's been overlooked and humiliated because of men who are competing as women. She says, I lose no matter how hard I train. And it's a really heartbreaking letter. There were 67 other athletes, coaches, and family members who have asked the Supreme Court to intervene. And this came up after a male cyclist who is claiming now that he's female blew the competition out of the water at the Randall's Island Crit event in New York last weekend. He only took up cycling in 2018. He's 14 years older than his oldest teammate, and he's whooping all these women. Arensman said that she wrote, I was born into a family of athletes. And she said, I've had to race directly with male cyclists in women's events. She says, as it becomes more of a reality, it's become increasingly discouraging to train as hard as I do, only to have to lose to a man with the unfair advantage of an androgynized body that intrinsically gives him an obvious advantage over me, no matter how hard I train. She said, I've decided to end my cycling career. She says, at my last race, it was the Cyclocross National Championships in the elite women's category. She says she came in fourth place, flanked on either side by male riders who got the places ahead of her. She said her sister and her family sobbed as they watched a man finish in front of her. And she said it's going to be, you know, she says she feels for young girls learning to compete. They're growing up in a day when they no longer have a fair chance at being record holders. And she's right. The World Athletics has banned trans men who cosplay as women. I don't say the word transgender women because it's a made up term. That's not a scientific reality. It's men who want to pretend to be women from competing in female world ranking events. They said, we're not saying no for forever. I think they just did that to kind of like lessen the blow because people have been, all the men who want to cosplay as women have been, and you know, these activists have been raging about this. This is the thing when people live their lives and they make choices. You know, your choices are fine until you start demanding that everyone else accommodate you. But the people who are demanding accommodation, they pride themselves, and pride's a sin. They pride themselves on not having to accommodate anybody else. It is really sad. I worry about women's sports. I feel like the environment is right for the pendulum to swing the other way, but I don't think we're there yet. We have headlines on the way. And then coming up after that, you have seen this White House correspondent. He's with Today News Africa. KJP doesn't like him. She never calls on him. He's notoriously known as the guy who doesn't get called on. Simon Ottaba is going to join us, and we're going to talk to him because he was attacked by The View as well. So you don't want to miss all of that. That's coming up here.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So a California bill is targeting Skittles and other snacks that it says have toxic chemicals in them. Just so you know, the state that had like the shoot up areas and has needles and feces everywhere is targeting Skittles for being toxic. Everything is toxic there. It's they said the manufacturing distribution of foods containing chemicals that have been linked to health, blah, 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 blah. So it affects Skittles, Ding Dongs that have red heart sprinkles and a host of other food items. Why? I mean, people are, oh my gosh, this is so dumb. Just going, I can't.
It's gotta be food dyes.
It is food dyes. It's like the red food dye. I don't know. Amazon's rolled out contactless tech, like palm scanning, to 200 locations, including Panera, or what people in St. Louis call St. Louis Bread Company. They said that their palm scanning or cashier-less checkout technology is in more than 200 establishments. I don't like that. That's weird. A palm swipe would let you pull up and then like get your reward account, your histories, your order histories, all of that. If my grandmother was alive, she'd be going, that's of the devil. That right there's of the devil. If it was in anything distasteful was of the devil. It was just not, it was just, it's everything is of the devil. She didn't like. Yeah, that is of the devil though. That's straight up of the devil. All right. So a couple are banned from calling their baby Hades, after the name of the Greek god of the dead and king of the underworld by French officials. Hades is actually kind of a cool baby name. I got to be real. I mean, as you know, a retired goth somewhat. It is. That's a great baby name. I thought the French were like libertines. Come on. What's going on? Why can't you name your baby Hades? This kid's name would have been Hades Velasquez. That's actually really badass. If you have that name, you've got to go into MMA. Exactly. You can't do anything else but MMA or soccer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Hades Velasquez. Oh, my gosh. Think of the merch opportunities. I've already got this kid all merched out and totally marketed in my head. So stick with us because Simon Ottaba is going to join us. Ottaba. Next.
When you're stuck discussing politics with your friends, who's the most informed person in the group? Yep, you are. You're welcome. Listen, follow, subscribe. The Dana Show.
Yeah, right. You're right. You're here for me. Refer me. No. Nope, that's not. We're not doing this. We're not doing this. We're not doing this. We're not doing this.
From across the room. You've been discriminating against me and discriminating against some people in the briefing room. And I'm saying that this is the U.S., this is not China, this is not Russia. This is not Russia.
Okay.
What you are doing, you are making a mockery of the First Amendment.
Please.
It's been 7 months. You've not called on me. You've not got my messages. I'm saying that that's not right. That's not right.
One time's welcome, guys. Welcome. Welcome to the press briefing room. Okay.
This is not right.
Sir, let it go.
Are we ready? Are we going to behave?
Wow.
While many folks...
Decorum, please. Simon. Sorry to our guests. We apologize.
Yeah,
oh,
I
my.
Apologize.
Yeah,
okay. I apologize. Okay, well, many...
I think one of the things that really stands out to me about that clip was the behavior of the other reporters.
Yeah.
What happened with the loyalty of the free press? Because reporters should be sticking up for another reporter asking a question. And that's what he was trying to do. And the gentleman that you heard, Simon Ottaba, chief White House correspondent for Today News Africa in Washington, they're talking to Karine Jean-Pierre. They had the Ted Lasso staff behind them. He's there because he has serious questions to ask, as I'm sure other reporters did. But he wanted to ask his questions. He didn't want to sit there for a press tour of Ted Lasso, which ultimately, let's be frank, that's what they were doing it for. Simon joins us now via Skype, chief White House correspondent for Today News Africa. Simon, pleasure to have you. I was really shocked by that because I feel as though you are rarely, if ever, called on. When you are called on, I've always thought that your questions were questions that I would like to hear the answers to. I mean, we've played, when they have called on you, we've played them on the program here that people can listen to coast or watch on DirecTV. Tell me what happened that day, because they brought these Hollywood stars out And you're there to ask about some serious issues. How did this go down?
Thank you, Dana. Thank you for having me. It was a shame what happened that day. You know, it's been 7 months. The press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, she's not called on me. Because when you do your job, when you ask the real questions, the White House doesn't want to call on you. They sideline you. They, you know, try to brand you as disrespectful when you yell a question, but you don't really have any option but to yell your question. The other option that you have is to send your questions in advance or send your topics in advance. And if you have a real great questions on China, Hunter Biden, and all the other questions, they actually are not going to call on you. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound really how you would expect these press briefings to work. I don't think a lot of people who are listening or watching knew that.
No. You know, normally when you go to the briefing room is to ask the questions that the American people really care about. You're not there to be friends with the press secretary. You guys are not friends. You're there to do your job, and she's there to answer questions. She's being paid for that. And what's going on in the White House is, you know, it's like the press briefings are almost rigged. You have the people in the first and second rows who get all the questions. And the people in the third, second, fourth, fifth, sixth, seven rows are there to basically watch them. And the questions are mainly for left-leaning media. So you have CBS News and NBC and CNN and AP and Reuters, all of them. And so when you sit maybe in the back of the room like me, it's almost like you should understand how things work here. You know, we are there to do a prearranged press briefing. And, you know, I don't follow those rules. I believe that the American people deserve the truth. And for doing that, I'm being sidelined, I'm being discriminated against. And it's shocking what's taking place. I believe that the First Amendment is under threat. It protects the freedom of speech, freedom of the press, association, and even the right to petition your government to seek redress and all that. It's at stake right now.
I think you make very good points. We're speaking with Simon Atiba, chief White House correspondent for Today News Africa, because he is, I mean, really the reaction that I've seen in the press to your trying to ask a question, I was really disheartened. I mean, from programs like The View, I expect it, but from other reporters who were there in the room with you, what really blows my mind is that if that had been, I think, a Republican administration, when people like Jim Acosta would yell questions, he was defended. You weren't even, and you were actually quite respectful. You were just being loud with your question, and they were condemning you.
And actually, one of the guys who condemned me, who is a CNN analyst who used to work for Playboy, Brian Karen. Karen. So he's very disrespectful. He was removed from the White House Correspondent Association last year because he became violent in the Rose Garden. He was fired in 1992 by press, by TV station because he was rude to President Bush. He confronted, you know, President Trump press secretary many times, and he was one many times. So that's the guy who is trying to, you know, lecture me on how to be great in the briefing room. And, you know, as I said, I don't go to the briefing room to yell my question. You know, it's the way they disrespect me. You know, I'm also as black as the press secretary, and that's why it's shocking. She's ready to call on people from around the world, from Pakistan, Afghanistan, China, and different places, India, except Africa. Mm. And she does that because I don't abide by the rule. I believe that we should do our job. We should keep doing our job. Our job is simple. Afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. You're not there to become friends with the people in power. And when you do that, they punish you. They isolate you, they silence you, and they discriminate against you. And that's what is happening to me.
And it is happening to you. We're speaking with Simon Atiba. Even when, and you've discussed this, and I've heard other people bring this up before, even if, you know, for instance, if it's about Nigerian elections, if it's about, you know, some of the proposals in Uganda, you're not called on.
Yeah, and the worst thing, just to give you an example, In December 2022, last December, President Biden hosted the second U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, D.C. In attendance were 50 African leaders. And for those who are watching or listening, Africa has 54 or 55 countries, depending on who you ask, the AU or the UN. And when you have 50 African leaders in Washington, D.C., what that means is almost the entire continent of Africa is in Washington, D.C. to meet with President Biden. Yet the African journalist who covers U.S.-Africa leaders, Africa, U.S.-Africa's relations, is not given the opportunity to ask even one question. It's not just disrespecting me, it's almost disrespecting the entire African continent. And to give you another example, the VP, the Vice President, is going to Africa tomorrow. She's flying tomorrow. She will get to Africa on Sunday. The First Lady just returned from Africa. The Secretary of State just returned from Africa. Even as they are trying to expand ties in Africa, at a time where China is taking over, building roads, bridges, spreading disinformation against the U.S., they don't have the courage to call on the African journalist who comes to the White House every single day and tries to strengthen those ties with relevant and accurate information. It's shocking. It's almost like a curse, almost as if the country is cursed. They don't understand their friends, prefer to do business with enemies. And also there are other issues. One of the biggest crises in the world, the biggest humanitarian crisis in the world right now is not in Ukraine, it's in Ethiopia, Tigray region. 600,000 people have been killed between 2021 and 2022, according to the U.S. Yet we don't see the billions of dollars flowing there. We don't see people talk about, you know, suffering and, you know, the international coalition saying that we need to go and save those black people. And President Biden is the person who said he was the guy for the little guy, for, you know, black and brown and the minorities. And I've not seen that love and care in the White House.
And you bring up a very good point, too, about the Chinese relationship and the Belt and Road Initiative. And you would think that they would want to call on you more because of your knowledge of this, and because also you would be able to ask the questions, I think, better than some reporters who don't have that sort of knowledge. Simon Atiba, last question for you. What would you like to see in the White House press briefing room? How would you like for it to be ran? Because there have been some people who suggested that you should run it. How would you run it?
Yes. Thanks. So I just want people to be fair, to respect people, and to not to judge people based on how many people came to view their program yesterday, how much money they have, what type of jet do they fly, what type of ties do they wear when they come to the briefing room, what type of car do they drive. I want people to understand that all the people in the briefing room, they represent either the American audience or American allies, you know, like people in Africa. And you should take questions from across the room, including from people who disagree with you or who will ask you tough questions, because their job is to come to that briefing room, seek the truth, challenge the authorities, not to become friends, not to smile. And I just want them to be fair. I want to say something to the people watching now, people listening now. I want them to pray for me, because I feel like I need prayers. And I think that's like the last hope, because what I really thought the U.S. was, you know, the land of freedom and where people respect the law. I've seen that even in the White House, that law is not respected. People treat you almost like in China or Russia, where you are afraid to ask a question because of fear of retaliation. And I'm seeing those things happening in the White House. And I want people to really pray for me and even pray for the country, that those of us who came from outside the U.S. because we saw a shining light, a country where we could be as comfortable, more comfortable than where we were, where there was freedom. I'm afraid that I may end up being in a country that is almost as dictatorial as where I used to be.
Well said. And I think that we absolutely can and can pray for you and will. Simon Atiba, one of the few real journalists left in the world. We appreciate what you do. And thank you for your time. We absolutely will pray for you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
This is Channel 12 News with CBS 12 in Florida, Martin County, Florida. Here's the headline. This is why I'm laughing. Man tells deputies his name is Dog. Barks at deputies. A man who told the sheriff's deputies that his name was, in fact, Dog. He was apparently pulled over. He was pulled over by the cops, right? And they asked him for his identification. He refused to comply. He said, no, my name's Dog. And they said, Martin County Sheriff's Office said, fortunately, Canine Maverick was close by. He determined Peterson's bark. The guy's name, last name was Peterson. He determined his bark was exaggerated. He was definitely a car thief and not a dog. And then when they, Peterson then told him that his name was actually Jesus. And then they charged him with grand theft auto and resisting arrest. He was taken to Martin County Jail. What in the world? Oh, I can't, man. So a Florida man was arrested after allegedly threatening to bomb Papa John's while placing an order. Okay. This is Lakeland, Florida. A Lakeland man was accused of calling in a bomb threat to Papa John's Pizza on Wednesday. Polk County Sheriff's had to deal with it. An employee told deputies that a man named Jay was trying to place a delivery order. He argued with her. Then he called back threatening her. And he goes, I can bomb the store. So then the Papa John's worker hung up for the second time. The employee gave deputies Jay's name, phone number, and address. They identified him as Johnny Vega, of course. I don't know. That, what a name. That's his actual name. That sounds fake, but it's real. Age 24. They contacted him. He denied knowing anything. He didn't know. He said, that's not my number that you just called me on. What? So then they apparently, they ended up confirming the number. He was charged with false report of a bomb, tampering with evidence, and resisting an officer without violence. What is wrong with people? Like, what do you got to argue about with somebody at, you know, oh, I saw this. Why do you got to argue with somebody placing your order at Papa John's? So Kane, so a couple of you sent me this too. And Kane, man, Kane, first off, do you see the teeth on this thing, Kane?
No.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like this guy's F-A and going to F-O. A video shows a Florida man feeding an alligator a sandwich.
What kind of sandwich?
I just... He's in a pink shirt. His identity is unknown. He's seen patting the alligator on the jowls as it floats away. Then he rips off another piece of sandwich, splashes his hands on the water, and tries to feed it again. Now, Florida Fish and Wildlife say that you can't do this. It's a second-degree misdemeanor. You got 60 days in jail or a $500 fine. Because they said when they're fed, alligators can lose their natural wariness and then start to associate people with food. That's kind of super dangerous.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a lady that, you know, got a and I was looking at this video because it's on Instagram. I'm sorry, but he's in a creek. This is a creek. Yeah. Kane, that's a creek. He's in a creek and this gator comes up and he's feeding this gator a Sammy. In a creek. It's a creek. He's got his beer and a koozie close by. Is that a dog in a kennel? My gosh. He's in a creek. So they're everywhere. Gators are everywhere. Every body of water. And I don't know. I can't deal with watching that video very long because I'm just like, this guy's going to get it. He's going to get it. A woman shreds her Mustang tires fleeing from cops at over 110 miles per hour. Lady driver. 59-year-old Barbara Ray driving her Ford Mustang. She was fleeing for a traffic stop doing 110 miles per hour. She was arrested by Flagler County Sheriff's Office. Her tires were shredded. Coming up, third hour. And we're going to talk to the weapons trainer behind John Wick's Gun Fu. Stick with us.
Stoves that would be impacted are high-end gas stoves for the, you know, most expensive gas stoves. And the reason why they were found to be inadequate is because in many cases they have very heavy grates and the burners can be an oval shape, which causes excess amount of natural gas to be emitted relative to the pot that's on there. So it's just, it's a wasteful use of natural gas.
Why are you in our kitchens looking at our pots? So what I want to know, lady. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of our third hour this Friday. I know. And make sure you sign up. Chapter and verse. Good things that come out. You can find our discussion with Simon Atiba up at Facebook, YouTube as well. It'll be up there. So when did she turn into a right-wing conspiracist?
Yeah. Good question.
Now, I ask this because, I mean, we were told that to talk about gas stoves being banned was a right-wing conspiracy theory. Even though they said that they were going to go and ban stoves. Even though, what was it, that Nepo baby? What's his face? Trumpka? Trump, T-R-U-M-K-A, his kid? He is a Nepo baby. His daddy was head of AFL-CIO, Richard Trumpka. So it's that Nepo baby that's running, what is it, consumer or whatever, something, some stupid thing we don't need. And he's trying to tell everybody what you know. We've got other problems, guys. I don't need Uncle Sam peeking his top head into my kitchen, looking at my pot and what type of gas burner I'm using. If I wanted to just set a fire on my counter and you know, roast s'mores over that, then I'm going to do it because I can. Thought this was America. I'm going to do it because I can. But now, so they are now saying that the... I guess basically they do want to go after stoves, but only some of them. Is that right? Am I hearing that correctly?
That's right.
You're going to get an old wood stove, Kane?
Yeah, I'm just going to go completely the other way.
You're going to go full Laura Ingalls.
That's it. Doing Little House on the Prairie. Wood stove. That's all.
If you're going to do a wood stove, get like a bougie one.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know if there is one, but get one that's all like cool looking.
With the water tank in the back and everything.
Yeah, get something bougie. Just saying, this whole thing is so goofy. Remember, they did these tests when they were coming to this determination about the stoves. They did this test on, I can't remember what type of stove it was or how many burners that it had, but it was a test where they were looking at, you know, what kind of toxins or whatever it was putting out, and it was a sealed room with no ventilation, no hood, no nothing. It's almost like these people don't know how to cook, right? Like they don't know how to cook. I mean, that's at least what it seems like. This is so, man. So they are coming. Or she's just a right-wing conspiracist. I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with that one. She's just a right-wing conspiracist. That seems, you know, that works. Let's just do that. So that's Jennifer Granholm. And I had a couple of other. Where's the other one that I had? This one right here. Here it is. This is the Denver suburb that's voting to ban new gas stations from being built because of climate change. Denver suburb voted to ban new gas stations from being built because of climate change. It's that city council of Louisville, Colorado, 30 minutes north of Denver, 20 minutes east of Boulder. They voted unanimously to approve a city ordinance that would cap the number of gas stations at 6. Oh, man. They limit the number, blah, blah, blah. Now, they may increase the cap to 7, but only if they get like a Sam's Club or a Costco, because they have the gas stations. This is the only exceptions. If I were Sam's or Costco, I'd be like, I'm not going with you ratchety people. Right. No. Now, they said that any new gas stations have to be built further than 1,000 feet away from an existing station, unless it's a retail center. A newly built station or expansion into existing one, here you go, must include building electric vehicle charging stations. You know, because batteries do so great in the cold.
Yeah.
It's like their preferred environment. It's equal to about 20, and they have to have equal to about 20% of the total number of gas pumps at the station, but no less than 2. Oh man, you guys know how much I hate EVs. Sidebar, I like tech, but because they're being pushed on me so hard, I am so anti-authoritarian that I will be against normal everyday items just because I feel like it's everywhere,
American
right?
DNA.
Yes. They said that gasoline stations may also be banned They said that they want to encourage more electric cars, so they basically the gas stations have to promote EV usage. Shut up. Oh my gosh. So that's I can't. I'm done. They said they want to be a state that's 100% on renewable energy by 2040. Can I just reiterate that we don't even have enough rare earth elements to have everybody on it? We don't got enough for everybody. That means some people are going to have to walk or get horse and buggy. The thing that I hate about environmentalists is that they pick the stupidest way to go about their objectives. They sit here and they complain that oil and gas are dirty and polluty, for you know, making up a word, even though we have, without the government, developed the cleanest extraction methods before the government decided to get high and mighty and try to force companies into doing what they already were doing so that they could continue to make money. Environmentalists act like oil and gas isn't from the earth. It's dirty. It comes literally from the ground. And then they got mad with the big pipelines. We don't want another pipeline to safely transmit oil from the from Canada down to, you know, basically the ports in Houston, etc. We don't want that, even though you can't even, I mean, they covered all up. It's not near any aquifers and all this other garbage. It's not near any of that. No, they would rather everything go on rail. You know, which, what was the average? How many derailments are there a month now that we learned after the?
I would say there's at least like 10, yeah. 12 a month.
So they wanted everything to go on rail because that's more environmentally friendly. To transport your fuel using more fuel that you want to ban.
East Palestine.
To have it, you know. Yeah, East Palestine. I mean, it's just kittens and sunshine there, right, environmentalists? And they say, oh, it's so bad. You know, like it's so ugly. But then they have no problem with strip mining stuff for rare earth elements. Dangerous, dangerous, toxic work. And then we don't even have enough of them anyway for everybody to be able to take part. We just don't. There's just not, and it's not a replenishing thing like oil and gas. People don't understand. It creates more oil. It creates more oil. Petroleum, it recreates. Golly. It's also kind of why yes, I get worried about wildlife with oil spills, but the environmentalists go so, there's environmentalists and conservationists. They're very different things. The environmentalists, it's like never took a geology class. And they see oil somewhere and they're like, this is so bad. It's from literally the earth. It's from there. And then they'll put up windmills that chop up birds like a giant slap chop in the sky. They just chop up the hell out of all those birds, eagles and everything else. And they're ugly. They are stupid. Oh, can I just, oh, please indulge me for one moment. I have like a list of things in my head mentally. I never put it down. But everybody has things that they just loathe, right? Things that you see and you're like, ugh, like high-waisted jeans, right? Things like that. Any kind of platform flip-flop. I don't get it. There's some other things that I don't like either, right? Why are you laughing? Glitter as makeup. Windmills, the turbines. They're not windmills like cute Dutch windmills, right? Those are cute. These are ugly and sharp and huge and horrible. If you drive out to West Texas, you start seeing them up like, it's like a alien spacecraft coming up out of the earth. They're ugly. There's fields of them. So ugly. It just ruins the skyline. And they chop up birds. Mm-mm-mm. Slap chop. So I keep seeing the EVs. If you meet anybody, not everybody, I have a couple of friends that have EVs. And I swear they get smug every time they get in the car. I don't know what it is. I think it like bestows upon you a certain jackwagon quality because they get very smug about their car. It's funny. I don't know. I say that, you know, facetiously, but I don't know, man. I can't. You always feel judged. Have you ever pulled up at a gas at a stoplight and you're in your gas guzzler? I want less gas mileage. right? I want the lowest gas mileage possible. I want a half a gallon a mile or something like that. Yeah. I want, you know, a tank the size of a squirrel belly. That's what I want.
Hummer. A tank that tows a Hummer.
Anyway, you pull up at the stoplight, and I swear it feels, there's this urge within me. I just want to gun it. Like, I just want to, you know, drag race them right at the stoplight. I can't help it. And I have a lot of horsepower. Yeah, I drive a vehicle that basically puts hair on my chest because I can. So I just want to gun it when I get up there at the stoplight. I can't help it. Cars should be loud and smell like gas, and you should live in fear of the door. That's what a car should be. That's a car. That is an automobile.
That's where the 70s.
That's right.
The 70s are all about.
I want my car to basically try to hit on me and slap me on the ass. That's what I want my car to do. That's what it has to have that aesthetic.
Can we not?
Yeah, we are. I'm old school, though. I want it to have, like, the stash.
Just normal men.
Oh, man. That's true, though. That's what I want. That's the kind of car that I like. That's what I want. So, anyway. You feel my pain. My first car, and I'm going to move on. You know what my first car was? Well, it was a Buick Skyhawk, and there was a short in it that whenever I turned the wheel left, it went, ooh, and I was listening to the Stones one day. Oh, man, what song was it? Sympathy for the Devil? I can't remember. But it was the chorus, ooh, ooh, and I thought there was like a flat ooh in there every time I turned left, and I realized I was driving all over town and like weakly honking at everybody, and I didn't know because I was blaring the Stones so loud. Is the song. I was blaring it. I was listening to the song, blasting the Stones, and I didn't know that every time I turned left, it went ooh, but it was a real flat, and I only noticed it when I was turning. And there, I was like, now, I've never heard that flat tone in the mix before. And I turned it down, and because people were looking at me, and I just thought, you know, maybe they liked my crappy car. I don't know. I was 16. No, it was that. It was apparently my horn was weakly honking at everybody as I drove around town. And it was like the most amazing cell phone ever. It was so amazing. No, after that, I had a Geo Metro, which only went like 65 miles per hour. And I had to basically pray to the Lord every time I got on the highway and like stab my feet through the floorboard to Flintstone it to get up to where I needed, because they were going to knock my little roller skate all over the highway.
It wasn't doing 65 unless you're going downhill.
Yeah, it was horrible. They're death traps. And I drove one on 270, no less, Kane.
Oh.
Yeah, in Missouri. Everyone who is in and around Missouri is like, oh, girl, what? Yes.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the Dow plunges more than 200 points amid panic that Deutsche Bank could be the next to go after shares in the European beast tumbled 14%. People are trying to contain what they call contagion. In New York, a cow escaped a slaughterhouse. This happens like every year, by the way. It marks the start of spring. A cow escaped a slaughterhouse and ran through New York City and Brooklyn. Its life is now going to be spared. I swear they did this on purpose. It was a four-month-old calf. It was being delivered from a poultry slaughterhouse. She escaped, started running around in the street. A video captured the incident of the calf evading people in the streets. They tried to round her up. She was eventually recaptured and then transported back to the farm she came from in Pennsylvania. And so she's going to live out her life at Skylands Animal Sanctuary. That's awesome. So does someone else taste your filler spot? Depeche Mode's got a new album that is coming out. This is going to be their first after the death of their founding member, keyboardist Andy Fletcher, in 2022. Dave Gahan and co-founder Martin Gorge are going right ahead. It's out today, Memento Mori. I just remembered I pre-ordered it, so I got to check and make sure I got it downloaded. Coming up, John Wick is in theaters today. Are you going to go see it? And we're going to talk to the weapons trainer behind what is called Gun Fu. Stay with us.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others.
The Dana Show.
This hit goes out to you, Mr. Wick.
Woke up this morning.
42 regular, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it begins. Challenge him to single combat.
If you win, you'll have your freedom.
Oh, it's in theaters everywhere today. We've been talking about this, I think, what, since it was announced that they were, since they were making another one. John Wick in theaters today. John Wick 4, I'm very excited about it. And welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here. Listen coast to coast in a market near you. You can also watch the simulcast Facebook, YouTube, DirecTV, channel 347. Joining me now, I think, is one of the coolest people out there. One of the coolest dudes. He's involved. He's been involved with this whole franchise. And I think he's really helped popularize this phrase that everybody says, gun fu. He's like this magical weapons trainer that Hollywood loves, and he has this like magical fairy tale land in, you know, Simi Valley. It's like this amazing training facility, and he's got all kinds of cool stuff that he does. I've never seen anyone shoot as well as Taron Butler. It is, I said a joke earlier, you could sneeze and he'll like shred 20 targets and like reload and reholster before you're done sneezing. Taron Butler joins us now via Skype in the coolest chair ever. Taron, it is so nice to finally talk with you. Congrats on the John Wick franchise, because you've been involved in this. You make it look so good, so easy, so fluid. So, Mecca, congratulations to you.
Thank you, Dana. I really appreciate it. Thank you for letting me come on the show. It means a lot.
Of course, of course. Talk to me about this, because you've been, you're the weapons trainer for this franchise. You are the guy who all the stuff that John Wick does that we see him doing with his firearms, all the technique, that is all you. And I was reading that you got involved in this. You knew the guys with 8711 who did a lot of work with the film, and that's how this all came to be, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Chad Stahelski and J.J. Perry, he's a director now. He just did Day Shift with Jamie Foxx. They came out and saw my style and wanted me to eat an apple and shoot at the same time. There's this funny video on YouTube of that. When they saw that, they're like, this is the guy. It was pretty cool. And as we went with each of the movies, we progressed with the styles, which were kind of happening in my three-gun career. So in the first movie, he's doing weak hand shotgun loading. In this part three, he's doing quad loading, which was, for three-gun, was the fastest thing out there. And for part four, which may be the last movie, we had to go next level with like this crazy Genesis MagFed shotgun. It's just going to be the most insane action sequence you'll ever see tonight if you see the movie, with his pit vipers.
So yes.
Training the guns also progress with the movie.
Now, for people who don't know, Taron Butler is what they call a grandmaster shooter. It doesn't get any higher than that. You know, you have like your grandmaster chess player. He's a grandmaster shooter. And how many disciplines? Like five different disciplines, I think?
Seven disciplines in USPSA. I got a grandmaster card in 1 year. So, like, no one's ever really done that before. My best friend, Travis Tomasi, I did it with a Glock, did it with a race gun. And it just was fun. It was what I was built to do, born to do. But as you get older, you know, I didn't want to be like the 50-year-old shooter still trying to go through it. And people liked the style of guns I built because they were winning everything. Mm-hmm. And I started making them for, you know, everyone, not just me and my couple friends like Chris Perez. And next thing I know, you know, we start some of the companies, and that was whatever. And I just said, you know what, I'll do this myself. I don't want to be told how to build right. Do it. I know how to build a gun, not by some corporate clown. So did my own thing. It took off. And then I was lucky enough to get involved in so many different films even before Wick. But this was a franchise that took me next level, especially when Keanu's video came out and he was shredding across the course. And everybody's like, that's not him. It's a stuntman. But then I put out a longer version where it shows him at the end talking like, was that good enough run, Taron? I don't know. And just, you know, and all that. And just becoming friends with them and all of them involved. 8711 does the best action films in the world. Chad is the most kick-ass director. Him and James Cameron, who are unbelievable, and guys I've got to work with over the years. And I'm very blessed to be part of that world. And to be able to, I love movies. I love them even more than shooting. And it drives me nuts when I see a horrible grip, you know, like a cup and saucer.
I gotta interrupt you, because I read a quote from you. You were talking about Walking Dead, and you did not like the way that he was holding that.
Oh
my gosh!
He's shooting, and it's ricocheting off the cement, hit the zombies in the head, I guess, because like this big limp, you know,
yes!
python. And, you know, and things like that. So, they'll still be mistakes. So editors could mess up a move. They can do all the reloads you want, like Tomorrow War. That was done with extreme props. They did 1,000 reloads. Some editor takes all the reloads out of the opening scene where he fires 10,000 rounds at the freaking aliens with an AR-15 with a 30-round mag.
Yeah.
And Gary Tours, and they were doing reloads everywhere. And this, we want to cut it all out. Like, oh, great.
That ruins your suspension of disbelief. Because if for anybody who even has, like, you know, a freshman understanding of firearms, it takes you out of the film. Then you're like, wait a minute. He does not have a 5,000 round mag.
And that's what they like about Wick is, and it's also the director, like, to be honest, pushed me. Chad pushed me because he's such a perfectionist, and he went to competitions. Like, the director of John Wick and I are driving to matches on Sundays.
That is awesome.
And I'm asking him, like, what was it like when you first met Keanu on The Matrix? Told me all the backstory, how he got crushed, and they dropped him on the rail car, broke all his bones, and then we're running matches. No one knows, like, you're shooting with the director of John Wick right now. You know, that's back during part 2 and 3. And he went out there to experience it. He likes it. And he's literally the deadliest director on the planet. Like, I've got his. I want to read the title.
Nice. Yes. Deadliest director on the planet. That's awesome. Yeah.
And not only can he shoot, he can beat the living crap out of anyone out there. And so it's just cool that he wants the details. People saw in John Wick 3 the quad loading. Like, what is he doing? What is that? And he'll watch it over and over and over again. Same thing in part 2. He does a match saver load.
Yes.
The gun jam. No, it didn't. It's a match saver. And they get these. It's all the details, not just firing gun, 1,000 rounds. Hey, can you load it now for me? You know,
movie
star, you know, just suddenly cut, the gun's loaded again. Or they're just showing the mag go in. Or they'll even show scenes where I watch a movie really quick, takes the mag out, puts it back in. That's the reload. Like, what do you do? What?
Yeah, that's not.
So
I love the attention to detail, even down to, like, you know, you were saying quad loading for those who they're loading 4 shots at once that you're with the shotgun. I think they do that a lot in 3-gun competitions. It's a hard technique. Yeah. It is a hard technique to learn.
The hardest thing for Keanu to learn was that. I mean, all of it's hard. The old school loading with months and months of training, the quad loading. All of it, you know, he was like, you know, this is just insane. But finally, when he got it, he got it. It was
best awesome. Do the basics better.
And,
yeah.
Same thing with Halle Berry. Training her was so much fun and so wonderful. And it changed her career, took her next level as an action star and all that stuff. The Wick franchise takes people, kind of like when Tarantino took these old stars and put them in a movie that gave them their career again, you know, like John. You know, he does that with these actors. They become big, you know, bigger action stars because of it.
Talking with Taron Butler, who is the weapons trainer for the John Wick franchise. You may have been asked this before, but you've worked with so many people. You got to tell me your James Cameron story, because that's pretty cool. I'm going to get to that. But of all the people that you worked with, are there some people, I would just think if you're an actor, you probably have, I don't know, is there natural talent that some people have, you know, when they come in and you recognize kind of pretty early on, like, this person's going to be easy to train, this person's going to get it, this is going to, tell me about that.
There's both. There's some that, you know, it's really rough. Like Michael B. Jordan's a total natural. Like, I trained him for Black Panther and Without Remorse, total natural. Like, and he's left eye dominant, which is not what you want, but it doesn't matter. It's unbelievable. Same thing, Aaron Taylor Johnson. He's in a lot of stuff. He's in Bullet Train. He might be the next James Bond. He's been coming out for like 8 years. He's British. And, like, it's funny, these British guys like him and Sam Worthington from Avatar, like, what the hell? He's doing like 80 draws and crazy reloads. And all his videos will maybe come out one day if they let him come out. But, you know, you can't put out stuff unless the studio wants you to. But those guys are really good. Garrett Dillahunt from The Walking Dead, from a ton of movies, Ambulance. He's crazy good, super good.
Wow, that's awesome. So James Cameron, right when you were, this was years ago when you were starting, as I understand it, came up to you out of nowhere and said, I heard you're this badass pistol shooter and handed you 10 G's and said, make me you. Is that correct?
It's a totally true story. So bodybuilder friend of mine, I shot competitions with John Richling. He was like from the old school of Arnold bodybuilding. And I had no property, no house there, just a dump, nothing, just land, no building. And he's like, I'm bringing out James Cameron. This is 1997. So I'm like, yeah, right. So I set up my mountain with a bunch of water bottles and nonsense. And And it's just, you know, I think it's going to be a one-time thing, meet my favorite director of all time and all that stuff. And he rolls up in two Hummers, and the guy jumps out, a couple other friends of his from Malibu, some other bodybuilder guy, and William Abernathy, who is his one of his friends who helped write Titanic. He's got this, he's in Titanic. He has the smiley face, the bullet hole. He's like, and the ship sinks, it breaks and pulls the other half down. He's there. And they all come out and had this smorgasbord of guns laid out. HK-91s, all my cool Styrogs, all this cool shit. Cameron didn't care. He walks up to me and he goes, I heard you're some kind of a raging badass shooter. At the time, I was a Grandmaster pistol shooter only. I wasn't three gun yet. I was only like 3 years into it. And I go, yeah, yeah. He's like, all right. So he pulls out an old combat commander he got from some trainer on Terminator 2. He's got some, you know, cup of saucer, and trash. And I'm trying to fix his grip, and I'm moving his grip around. And he goes, enough. I'm like, holy shit, Jan Cameron's yelling at me. He goes, before I change all this shit, all this stuff, I need to see if you can even shoot. And I was like, man, this is like more pressure than trying to win a nationals, you know?
Yeah.
So I got these targets all lined out, and Jesus Christ came through me, and I shot just like unbelievable, just reholstered really fast. He's like, holy, did you guys see that? Did you see what he did? All these alpha things, and, you know, I got to learn to shoot like that. And it was pretty amazing. So we sat on the bed of his truck, and we're sitting there. And I'm like, isn't it amazing? Like, you have now the number one movie in the world, Titanic. He's like, yeah, it's great. I'm getting nothing. I'm broke. I'm like, what do you mean broke? He's like, my net worth is like $7 million, which is great. But like, you know.
Yeah.
And as he's talking, his attorney is there with him, keeps shooting. And as he's talking, he starts realizing, you know what? He starts thinking, because he went to 20th Century Fox and they were like, enough with changing all this stuff. The budget's going crazy. You want to change the color of the drapes. You want to change the deck of the boat. Enough, Jim. Nobody cares. I made this movie before with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Peter Gallagher on CBS. It was a bomb. It's got a bomb. He's like, screw you. I do my own money. I make my movie. I'll pay it myself. Forget my back-end money. Forget it all. I'll do it. And he does it his way. And as he's talking to me, he realizes with his attorney that he never signed anything in that meeting. So but then he writes me a check. He goes, I want to be as good as you. Every Thursday I'm coming out till we decide it's over or whatever. And he writes me a check for 10 grand, big money. I didn't have any money. And like, holy crap, he takes off. And like the next Thursday he comes back, probably two Thursdays later, he tells me, because he's training every Thursday, he tells me, guess what? I go, what? He goes, I never signed that stuff. He's just got like $400 million and it's just rolling in. So then his whole security team comes out, getting them squared away. They're all Marines, making sure he's protected, all this fun stuff, training them all the time with proper gear. It was a pretty amazing. It was the next like 7 years. He's coming out like, hey, we're going to do Spider-Man. It's going to be starring Tom Cruise. It might be me or Michael Bay directed. I'm like, what? Ended up being Tobey Maguire. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just fun, those stories. I'm starting a new show called, you know, what was it? Thing with the back of her neck. Dark Angel.
Yes.
It's just fun. It was fun times. And he's come back all over the years. And I got to do the training for the last Avatar and all that. They didn't show any much of the training videos, whatever, because everybody's scared of, you know, videos of shooting. But whatever, you know, I don't care.
But it adds so much to the character. It really does. I wish we had more time. Taryn, I would love to have you back. Anytime you want to come on, my friend. You know, we got to come on and talk about the stuff that you're doing, and we can get into, you know, what's your EDC and all that kind of stuff. And I just love it. I think it's good. It's a bucket list to go out there. I'll make my way out there and visit you in Simi Valley at some point.
For
we'll
sure.
get out there to
and
California.
Thing, everybody, see the movie in theaters. Don't wait for it at home. It's a theater movie. It's
yes.
it's like Top Gun. It's an experience. It's considered one of the best action movies ever made. Top five, not the best. And don't leave after the credits. There's this Easter egg like in a Marvel film. So wait for the end.
Oh, that's good to know. I love knowing that. So I don't have to scroll when I'm like sitting there in the theater and looking it up. Taryn Butler. Yeah. And you can find him online as well, Taryn Tactical. And find him on Instagram and Facebook. He's all over. Taryn, thank you for what you do. Appreciate it. Thank you for making movies accurate, keeping us in the story, and making it fun.
Thank you, Dana.
Of course. Take care. We'll talk again soon.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
First thing.
You know, I think Trudeau should really freak him out and do one of his blackface costumes like he always does. And who knows what Biden will do at this point? I mean, the clown show. Absolute clown show. Amazing how Trudeau gets a pass for that still to this day. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lesh here with you. Yeah, I wish we had more time with Taryn because I wanted to get into what's John Wick's toolbox. That would have been like a really long, that would have been good. Or his EDC. Like if you had to pick one and you could only have it forever, what would you pick? That's hard. That's like asking somebody to eliminate, like pick one fast food place or pick one comfort food. That's a tough one. So we'll have that up on Facebook and YouTube as well. And make sure you go to Substack, sign up for Chapter and Verse, the newsletter, all kinds of good stuff coming out there. And of course, next week, I don't know what's going to go on with that Alvin Bragg thing. I think he can't convince the jury. So we'll follow it. Today in Stupidity Kane.
All right. It's a dictator with Justin Trudeau. I'm sorry. Two dictators are together.
Okay.
Biden and Trudeau. This is what he said. Obviously, you know what Trudeau did with the truckers and all that in Canada, but listen to how Biden aligns with all that.
Well, listen, we're lucky. We have Canada to our north. Share the values. All the values are the same. We disagree and agree on things occasionally, but there's no fundamental difference in the democratic values we share.
Oh, boy, that's not good.
That is not good. What do you mean, like the values of, like, you know?
Come on, Joe.
Locking up truckers. I'm just wondering. Folks, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Again, find us on Facebook, YouTube, like and subscribe. Go see John Wick in theaters now. Go see it tonight. And I'll be back with you on Monday. God bless.